Welcome to The Lab, where we talk about life and beats with creators and electronic music around the world. Brought to you by Pushing Buttons Collective.
So yeah, so we know, you know, tall black guy, prolific remixer, beat maker, sound designer. You know, yeah, I peep game. You know, dude has definitely worked with a lot of up-and-coming talent as well as established talent. And just, yo, he's just, like I said, prolific and proficient at just making that soul. Like what I read in a comment on one of your videos, somebody wrote, "You are soulful intelligence." And that's so real because it is soulfully intelligent. You know, it's just like smart music, but it's also got... It's technically sound, but it's also got a lot of heart and soul in it. So definitely welcome my brother, Tall Black Guy, to the show. How you doing, my friend? What's going on?
I am doing good, but I appreciate you brothers for having me on the show and, you know, just trying to keep this good music thing going, man. You know what we came up on, man. Like all the goodness.
So let's begin from the beginning. We came up from the D, from Detroit, from Detroit. Yeah, let's talk about earliest memories making music, whether it's beat making or instrumentalist or what have you. Like, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, to finish the question.
No, I say what makes Tall Black Guy what he is. You know,
I had a big family. I was the youngest out of all of my cousins and stuff. So I had, you know, and then my pops is only like 20 years older than me, though, you know, but this is like in like the early 80s, 90s thing, though, you know what I mean? So he came up in, you know, when hip hop was first started, you know what I mean? And then my cousins was like 10 years older than me. So, you know, I kind of had, that was kind of my introduction, you know, and we're talking mid 80s, late 80s, early 90s. And at that time, you already know what was going on. Hip hop was kind of a new thing. And I was just trying to figure out, you know, I knew I liked art, but at the same time, it was just like trying to figure out a way to be creative and have a creative outlet. So I had a cousin. She was my older cousin. She was a girl, but what she would do, she would just beatbox. This is how she would do her music. This is how she'd be creative. You know, and she was an athlete too, though. But she would like do like little ciphers and stuff. She would be like the soundtrack for like the guys and stuff in the ciphers. So I kind of picked up this little beatboxing thing, and that was kind of my way of making music in the beginning. This is talking like you're talking like a kid, though. You know, and you know, I would watch the box and all that type of stuff, and you know. That was kind of the thing that I would do, you know, and so you fast forward to like around like the late 90s, early 2000s. I'm like, okay, I like all this different type of music. I grew up, I'm like 12, 13. And when like Tribe and De La and all that stuff was going on, I loved it. Didn't know why. I just knew it was dope because the influences, you know, my father and then my cousins and stuff. So, mm-hmm. And then you fast forward to like high school and all that stuff. I was like, okay, I like this music. You know, I like these different beats and stuff. So I just like, I want to make music, you know, and I played ball. So, you know, but this was the next option for me to be like some type of, you know, be a creative. So I was like, I spent $60 on this program called Sony Acid. Actually it was called Sonic Foundry.
Okay.
And then it was like, just, I wanted to make beats, you know, and that was the only way my parents could afford to buy me, you know, the MPC thing going on. So that was the next best thing. And then, you know, in the beginning, I kind of tried it, quit for a month. And then from there, after that month, I'm like, okay, I'm going to really mess with this thing. And it started off as a hobby. It literally started off as a hobby.
Okay.
And then from there, it became obsessive. I was just messing around, trying to figure out why Premier got his snare, what his samples is coming from, mm-hmm. and records and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's pretty much what it was, man. Just my pops and my older cousins kind of gave me at least introduce, and then I kind of took it from there, you know.
Word, it takes a village.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So you spent time not just making music, but also researching and learning the craft and the history, and is that what you're saying, yes?
Yeah. I mean, you learn as you go. You know, like my pops gave me my first record collection, so I didn't know who these people were, you know what I mean? But I would like go research, you know, and you know the art of digging. It's a whole rabbit hole. So you were like, I don't even know who this artist is, but it's something about this cat's music that I like. And then you just start going, trying to figure out your own creative way. Because in the beginning, when you actually be trying to, you know, trying to make music, you're going to emulate the people that, you know, influence you or the people that you like. So at the time, you know, it was Neptunes was rolling, Timberland was rolling, Premier, Pete Rock, you know, all these cats, and then, you know, just taking different elements from them, and then you kind of figure out your own little style or whatever, at least for me anyway. Mm.
Word. So, I mean, being from the D, from Detroit, how did Dilla fit into this? I mean, if he did at all, you know, being that around that time, early 2000s, he passed away. You're coming up. This is when you're coming into your own. Did he have any influence at all, or and it, you know, it's cool if he didn't. You know, I mean, I don't, you know.
He was just dope. You know what I mean? I think the guy for me was Premier, though. You know what I mean? Like that was my dude. You know, Premier and Pete Rock particularly. You know what I mean? Because Premier was just so simple. He was simple, but it was just like he could take any small fragment of a sample or song, and he could make it his own.
True.
You know, and that was kind of my dude. That was kind of what, you know, in the beginning, like, yo, how can I take this joint and make it as funky as Premier? You know what I mean? And then Pete Rock kind of came in where he started kind of having the chop thing going on, but he was kind of making his own band with the multi-sampling thing, though. You know what I mean? So he'll take like five to six, seven different samples and kind of making his own little band. Because, you know, you got to remember, cats coming up at that time wasn't really, at least the hip-hop guys, wasn't really playing a lot at all, really, if you really think about it, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, that was kind of my way, you know. So I was like, okay, I want to apply the chops from Premier, but the layering from
P-Rock.
From Pete Rock, beatboxing things like, you know, Timbaland and Neptunes, they had that whole thing going. Because they, like, you know, they was kind of thinking far left, but it still was hip-hop, though, you know, at the time, though. You know what I mean?
True, man. So,
So
Pete Rock, Primo, you mentioned Tribe. They're all in the same vein. And I could definitely hear that in your, or we could hear that in your music. So, at that time, you know, you're in Detroit. Was the beat scene emerging like how it is now, or were you handing out beat tapes? Were you working with rappers?
Crazy part about it, man, is like I started off making music in Detroit, but like where the footwork was going was in Chicago. My parents was separated, so I had this back and forth thing. So this is how I know H13, you know, is because I was in Chicago doing, you know, during the circuit. Now we talking like early 2000s, mid 2000s. Mm-hmm. Some around in there, you know, so I had some homies, we was, you know, doing shows, and then on the side, I would do like little beat battles and stuff, you know, in the city of Chicago.
Dance to the Drummer's Decibel or whatever,
dance,
DB.
All that joint. But those things were dope, at least for that time, because this is something new. It was like a form of like a DJ thing, but it was more on a producer and where you like, you can showcase your beats in front of a crowd. You know, and you can kind of get live feedback. And if you really think about it, it was actually a great tool because even if it's necessary to say you don't even win the battle, you can kind of still, you can still pitch your joints to a cat in the audience. And then a cat might mess with you like, yo, I like your beats. Oh, I like your sound. We can get up. We can collaborate. You know what I mean? So it's a space for that. You know, at least at that time. And then you kind of fall into your own, you know, after a while, you know, and then too, when you start collaborating with like other artists, then you figure out how to work with artists, though, you know, in the long run, though, you know.
Right. Well, from here, we're going to take a little break. We're going to get into a selection by TBG, one of my personal favorites, and that's Thrill Seeker. Let's talk about how you would describe your sound, like right now, presently.
Presently, it's still a lot of the same elements. But now, because, I mean, at the time when I started, I used to straight sample. But now, you know, over to say the last 10 years, I've self-taught myself to play keyboard and piano and, you know, being more of an instrumentalist. So now I can actually write my own songs. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to necessarily depend on a sample to make my point across, you know, as far as my art and stuff like that. Like, I can figure out chords and things like that, or I can listen to a song and I want to take these chords and mix it with the other song and so on and so forth. So now it's more or less trying to still incorporate and still keep the origins of what I was taught on, you know, in this hip hop thing, but kind of make it both ways. So you can do sampling, or, you know, you can take sounds from the samples and play over them. I mean, there's so many different ways you can do it though, you know?
So you're like, you've learned to play instruments and you're kind of like sampling yourself more. Is that what you're?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of definitely that. Like, I can pretty much, if I sit down long enough, like, I can play what's in my head. You know what I mean? So that's a thing in itself, though. And obviously, I want to get better. You know what I mean? But don't think if I find a keyboard player that can do something better than what I can, you know, all I can do is just kind of capture the sound. And I know, you know, producing enough, or at least what I hear and how to make it all one cohesive thing, though, you know?
You can get the idea across, whereas like a keyboard player might like embellish your idea and take it to different places, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what producing is, though. All you're doing is you're taking a person's idea and you're making it, you're embellishing on their idea to make it better,
right?
To make an overall better song, you know?
Tell us about collaborating with vocalists. You have a track with Moonchild, you have a track with Masego. How'd that come about, and do vocalists or a vocal person on your track, does that come as part of the idea, or is this usually just the result of
collaboration? Moonchild was just coming up at the time when I contacted them, and I was in the middle of making an album, and they were still fairly new. I think they had just released Play Rewind or something like that, but they were still super independent. I mean, like, now they're like doing everything, you know what I mean? So I was like, okay, let me reach out. I had a track, kind of a skeleton. I heard them on the track. I sent them the kind of the skeleton of the track. They came back with I Will Never Know. And then I kind of arranged. The thing is, like, now, what I'm able to do now is because you try to you have the song, but you try to add the coloring around the song. So you're complementing the song, you know, because the song is what most people are going to gravitate to. The beat is cool. That's dope. You got to have a dope beat. But when you have that marriage of the beat of the music and the song, then now you have, you know, this is those records where you have, like, you know, potentially like an Al Green record or Stevie or Michael, you know, I mean, like, it wouldn't be the same thing if you didn't have Quincy Jones accompanying Michael to make Thriller. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? So that's kind of the direction. I this is kind of how I see this picture now. You know, is just trying to compliment a great artist, though. You know what I mean?
Word.
And then with the Masego thing, Masego had his idea. He had a demo of Peace and Love. It was on SoundCloud. I don't know how he found out about me, but he's like, yo, dig your music, boom, boom, boom. And then I found Peace and Love, and I was like, yo, what are you doing with that? And so I end up creating this whole, you know, replaying the drums. We end up replaying the guitar and all this stuff to make his idea that he had. And it was just a demo.
Yeah.
And then it came, you know, it came together like that, you know?
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Word. So let's talk about first projects. You got Brazilian Chronicles, which is where I got introduced between that and I guess later on the Red Bull battle, Red Bull B battle. Brazilian Chronicles. I mean, I'm a Brazilophile, so that kind of like automatically, you know, that automatically just pulled me in.
I mean, for real, man. For my first introduction to Brazilian music, it was probably around like 2003. It was Flor Perrine. I'll never forget it. Mm. It was like Butterfly Dreams was my first introduction. And from there, I just went on a tangent and would just find like these little coffee shop Brazilian joints. And I would just make beats out of them. You know what I mean? So like a lot of that, like the Brazilian Chronicles and the Yusuf Rumperfield, I made those all when I was like 21, 22 years old. Mm. You know, I would do hip hop shit, but then I would go make other stuff based off the influence of, you know, off the inspiration I was hearing off this Brazilian music though, you know. Word. And it was just one of those things, like you just, you know, once you get sucked into that world, man, it's so soulful. Even though you don't know what they're saying.
Right.
I mean, they could tell you to go jump off a bridge, but still, like, that music is just still crazy, though, you know?
A lot of it is very emotive, and a lot of it is, you know, other sides are very percussive. Like, every state in Brazil has their own musical genres that they expound on.
Yeah, man. You know?
That Butterfly Dreams album is amazing.
Dude, open your eyes and fly.
Yes, yeah. I got it right here on my playlist. Hey, so I know.
I Flora, she's just something about her, man. She's one of those artists, man. At least for me, man. She's probably like it's like Lonnie Liston Smith and then like Flora. Mm. And then you can go it's a few other different ways you can go, but like those two right there are freaking crazy though, you know.
And when she works with her husband, Ayrton Moreira?
Ayrton Gilberto, yeah.
Yeah, he's percussion. Crazy, yeah, crazy, crazy.
Stupid producer. He's crazy producer, too, though. You know what I mean? Like, that whole Brazilian sound, you know, I mean, he was definitely an intricate part in that stuff.
Oh,
too,
yeah,
though,
for sure, for sure, for sure, man, for sure. So we got Brazilian Chronicles. We got Tall Black Guy versus Michael Jackson, which I'm surprised that Thrill Seeker wasn't on that. But
so many bangers on that project too, man.
It was in the beginning, but then Sky Zoo ended up picking up the beat for Cost to Sleep.
Right.
So I had to take it off of there though. I mean, but it originally was on there. You know what I mean? And again, like all that Michael Jackson stuff, like these were just joints I would just make on my spare time. Like I was working a job. I used to work as a carpet cleaner, and you know, it didn't matter what time, you know, if I'm inspired, I would just make joints. You know what I mean? It was an outlet, you know? And it was just a collection of joints I had. And at the time, I didn't think Michael was going to die. I knew I wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just kind of coincided, you know, with that. And that wasn't even the intention though. You know what I mean? These are just joints I just had.
When did you go from part-time musician, hobby, like obsessing over the craft to making this your full-time gig?
Literally 2 years ago.
Oh, word.
I'll be 3 years in December. So I basically worked since I've been working for however long that's been, until 2 years ago.
How'd you balance that? Yeah.
I mean, I still would do it. I mean, it was like, yo, you know, I have this dream, so it didn't matter what, I didn't matter what job I had, I was still going to do it.
Right.
You know, I was still going to come home. I was still going to work on my art. And, you know, again, it was just like a big outlet for me.
Yeah.
And so it started to become, you know, because the thing was like when I moved to England, this is like maybe about, what is this, 2019? It was about 7 years ago, about 6-7 years ago. When I moved over there, that's when everything changed. That's when, you know, opportunities started working out and all these different things. And, you know, for me, like I made so much music, it was just trying to figure out a way how to release it, who was going to accept it and all this type of stuff though, you know, I was like, okay, I'm making more working for myself than my regular job. I'm like, okay, let me try this. Let me see if I can actually do this. And, what was crazy, so this past, so 2018, I actually made more income working as a full-time musician than I worked in any other job. And I'm talking about for a corporation or, you know, for whatever job I have, I've made more money working for myself. So I'm like, okay, now we working for something now, you know? And obviously it takes time. Like, you know, it takes, cause you gotta keep working. You gotta keep working. And eventually, if you're ready, you got to take that leap and see if you can do it. Because at one point, you know, at some point in time, if you don't try it, you will never know. You know what I mean?
True. That is so inspirational.
I'm kind of curious about some of the jobs that you had. And then also, at what point you were like, you know what, I can just let this go. Was it a monetary point? Or was it like, man, if I don't stop working these jobs for other people, it's going to slow me down. Like, what was it?
I mean, I had like some crazy, I mean, I was a carpet cleaner, a junk remover. The last job I had before I actually quit my job, I mean, before I quit it, it was a cook. I was a cook on American Air Base in England. I did that for five and a half years. And that was my way of getting to, and the crazy part about it, me getting the job on the base was my way of even living in the country of England in the first place. Because you have to have a visa to even live there. Or some, you know, you got to even be a part of that. So the with them having the American Air Base, that was my gateway to actually living there. So I did that. And so I'm talking like I had to wake up at 4 a.m, you know, drive an hour. I wouldn't get home to like 6:30, and I still come home and get busy on the joint stuff, you know?
Damn, oh my God. That's amazing.
You know, and then even with the jobs before, so say I was the carpet cleaner, I did that for 4 years. My job starts at 7. I go to sleep at like 5, get up at 6, go to work, do whatever they want me to do, and still would come home and get busy. You know what I mean? So, you know.
That's passion.
I mean, continuing in Justin's train of thought, why England? Like, I'm just curious. What's the chain of events that led to that?
Hey, just put it like this. I was married. I'm not married anymore.
Got
there
you
go.
Got you.
I mean, you know, it wasn't nothing really working out in Detroit, you know, at the time, because this is like in 2011. I left Chicago probably around like 2009, went to LA for like a year and a half, came back home to Detroit, and it was like, okay, we ain't really got nothing going on here. Let's move to England. Her family's from there, boom, boom, boom. And it was hard in the sense because, you know, family wouldn't visit and stuff, but if I had not taken that step, man, I literally would not even be in this space right now. Meaning what I'm saying is that leap afforded me to travel pretty much a lot of different countries. And now going to earlier, you know, when this whole music thing even started, like I had a dream about this shit. And the joint came true. It came true. It literally like, yo, I want to make music for the world. I don't know what that meant at the time. Now you're talking 20, 21 years old. You know, you know, and then you fast forward down the line and I'm in Australia. 2014, first time, never been there before in my life. Don't know what to expect. Long ass flight. And I'm taking it all in like, yo, I am on the other side of the country from Detroit, Chicago. That in itself is, I accomplished my goal, you know? And so, you know, it's just, you know, just trying to, again, not so now, a little older, just trying to pay the, trying to pay the path forward and trying to help cast as many as any way as I possibly can with the little knowledge that I do have, you know, because it ain't all about you, you know, it ain't all about you. It's a bigger purpose in all of this stuff, and just trying to help cast though, you know. I mean, I know a little bit. It's still so much more I can learn, but if I see a mug coming up, and I know how much this form of my expression of art has kept me out of so much trouble, you know? And so you got to give cats a different, you got to give the younger cats a little different perspective. You don't have to go out here and be selling drugs or doing whatever, you know, it's different ways you can do it, but you got to work at it though. Mm-hmm. Don't get it twisted though.
Word.
So how are you helping? Like, what are you doing to help?
I've done like classes, college courses before, or tutorials, or just like you kind of just meet people just out and about. They ask you a question, like keep it straight up with them. Like, yo, you could do this, maybe it might work out for you. It might not work out for you. You know what I mean? You kind of being transparent with folks though, you know, but don't never think that you above helping a person that's kind of, you know, trying to figure it out, you know, as far as what type of artistic expression they're trying to do, though, you know?
Right.
I mean, you lead them by example, you know? So that's the help right there.
Yeah. And I'm not saying I'm not going to say like I'm perfect, you know? I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out myself, you know? I'm still trying to figure it out myself, though, but. And I even second, and then think about just to keep it funky though, like I second guess myself a lot. Cause you know, you do it, once you start doing it for like 20 some odd years, so on and so forth, and whatever in your mind you think you're supposed to be at, does it, and even on the monetary end, if it's not reflective of that, it's still a process that it's not even all about the bread of it. It's about your intentions when you actually doing it art though, you know? Why are you doing it? You know, what are you trying to add to something that was so beautiful when it actually first started it? And I'm talking from the more or less of the hip hop joint, you know, this is kind of what I came up on. And then eventually you start liking other music and stuff like that though. But like, what's your intentions with this stuff though? You know?
Mm-hmm. It's all about intentions. Well, on that, we're going to take a quick break. We're about to get into this other joint off the 8 Miles to Moen Art. This is, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, 8 Miles to Moen Art, my man. Yeah.
All right. This is There's No More Soul featuring Diggs Duke.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
between you and I, I've said this for years. When you were married, she was basically your representative, so I talked to her most of the time. But like, I was like, I'm basically his biggest fan. I want to say I have everything you've ever made. Like, you even gave me like a CD, like a CDR back in the day of stuff that I don't think is like really out or something. Like I got a ton of shit from you, bro. And like for me to have that song that he just mentioned highlighted is just, you know, it's a real like shot in the dark. It's like a needle in a haystack.
Hey, listen here, man. Like, you know, I'm learning, man. This, you know, this world is so small, man. And the thing about it, as once you start getting rolling, man, don't be a butthole to people. Because at some point, I'm serious. At some point in your life, it's gonna come back. Or, you know, and I'm not saying you gotta be perfect with it though, but like, yo, you gotta remember how you moving though. So if you wanna be a user and that's what you do, that shit gonna come back to you, bro. Mm-hmm. I promise you.
True.
I promise you.
True. True. Always gotta show love and show intention. You know? So we're in London. We're in England. We're at Lakenheath, which is about a mile. Not about a mile, about an hour or so outside of London.
Yep.
I'm imagining we're making trips to London. We're checking the scenes out. How was that London experience?
Literally, I didn't even stay in London. I stayed in this part of England called Norwich.
Yeah, I know Norwich. Yeah.
Which is basically like from London, it's like a 4-hour drive or like a 2-hour train ride. But then from Lakenheath, it's like maybe about 45 minutes on the driving side.
Right.
I did quite a bit of gigs in England, you know, in like different parts of England.
Okay.
But I never really spent a lot of time there, you know, only because like, you know, to that commute, you know, that joint is not cheap.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You got a wife and home, you know what I mean? So you gotta do it in the constraints of which your household allows you to do that, though.
True,
you know what I mean?
True.
But the times I would go out there, man, I mean, I met some cool cats. That's when I met like Eric Lyle and Digo and Kitey
and IG Culture.
You know, yeah, like all these, you know, like all these cats, man. You know, and this is just over time, though. You know, as I'm still trying to come up out there, though. You know.
Word.
And again, you know, you end up meeting some folks and you end up developing a relationship with them. And then, you know, it's like you want to be out there, but then he's like, oh, this joint is expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive to travel out there. British Rail is no joke.
You know, well, now the flip side is to live out there in London is crazy expensive, but to travel, like, you have access to all of Europe.
True.
You have access to like, Germany and Croatia, you know, right, all these different places. So that was awesome.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, just like I said, man, just from the standpoint just on just being able to be exposed to a different thing, you know, as opposed to, like, I'm in the States, I can go to L.A., like, that's still like kind of the same thing. Like, but when you start getting exposed to like different cultures and, you know, people don't even speak the language, but their heart is still right and all that stuff, like that changes your view. And that was one of the reasons why when I actually did make the return back to the States, it's like, okay, I love the Midwest, but at the same time, like, I kind of need to be on the side of being, you know, going to the New Yorks and the Phillies and being able to have access to go overseas. And, you know, I just want to try something different, you know what I mean? But yeah, man, it was a trip for sure.
So, you know, like you said, you know, being in England, that's like the jumping off point. That's like the gateway to Europe. How was the beat scene? Or, you know, I mean, I think you're bigger than that because you do music for the world. I mean, you're based in hip hop, but then you can do stuff with Brazilian music. You can do great remixes. How was the beat scene in general Did you experience it at all, or were you just gigging?
I never really got into the beat fan out there. I mean, at the time when I was starting to go out, you know, and that was more prominent in the States. And then even with the beat fan, like, I like it, but I got a lot of DJ friends. And I know for me personally, as a listener, I want to be taken on a journey. So when you do the beat thing, like, it's dope, but then you kind of stay in the same pocket. You're not taking people on an up and down ride. You know what I mean? And so, and by me making so much different types of music and different type of BPMs and all these different things, I'm like, okay, there's a reason why I got this stuff. So I need to figure out a way to represent myself in that type of way though. You know what I mean? So stuff I've made from 15 years ago, but it's still my sound, figure out a way to put it into a set. You know what I mean? I could do the beat thing. You know, I've been in the, you know, the hip hop stuff and all that stuff, but I'm like, okay, if I really want to affect, you know, really want to be in these conversations with the cast that I look up to, like say a Rich Medina or a DJ Jazzy Jeff or Kenny Dope or Louis Vuitton, you know, all these different cats, like, yo, you got to be able to weave in and out of that stuff. And that, again, it comes down to taking the listener on a journey, you know. And I had to learn it, you know. I knew I liked a lot of this music, but how can I, when a person wants to see my set, I got to figure out a way to incorporate the things that I think is dope, educate, still keep it funky, you know, set a vibe and all that type of stuff though. So, you know, that was kind of my approach with it though. You know what I mean? But again, for me, I never really got into the straight up just beat scene thing. I never really did that. I never got into that.
Dope. So, I mean, what do you consider yourself first? A producer, DJ?
Producer on it. I would literally stay in the crib and just make records if I could, you know?
Right.
But you gotta show face. You gotta, you know, shake hands, kiss babies, that whole thing.
Cut ribbons.
You know, you got, yeah. You gotta show your face. You gotta be a personable person though. So that, what that means is you gotta get out of the studio. You know what I mean?
How do you balance shaking hands and kissing babies and like the in real life work with the social media presence, internet presence that you've built? You have a pretty impressive internet world.
All I want to say is I do not like social media. It's just a lot. That's a whole nother beast.
Right.
And my ex-wife took care of a lot of that, but you know, it was one of those things that, like, yo, I gotta learn it. One, you gotta learn it for yourself. You just gotta learn it. You know, if you're an artist, you gotta be your biggest promoter, regardless if it ain't nobody doing it for you. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
With the social media thing, I try to keep it balanced. Like, I'll do it. I'm not like overly crazy about it. Like, I'm not gonna do a post every single day unless I'm inspired to do it. I think it's more or less for me, is just like the content, you know, and two, it's not all about me. So like, it ain't all about music, but I like art. So if I see a dope piece from someone, I'm gonna promote that. That's just dope. You know what I mean? Or I hear this piece of music from this person, you know, from one of the homies or somebody I don't even know, but I just like their vibe, you know, promote that. You know what I mean? That's how this whole community thing works though, you know?
Word.
Word. Sure. Curator of the dope stuff.
That's all it is, man. You just want the dope shit. You just want all the dope shit, you know?
Well, speaking of the dope shit, of the dope stuff, you won a contest, a remix contest that I actually entered too late, but you won a contest. God, I have it written down here. Why?
Is it the
Robert
King?
Glasper.
Oh yeah. King.
Robert Glasper, yo, that Move Love joint.
Yeah.
Like, it was like you stood out because you kind of like changed the measure. Like you switch it from it. You changed it from like 4/4 to some ill
6/8.
Oh my god, yo, that was so heavy, man. Like, what was the inspiration behind that?
I wish you could have seen Paze's face. He's actually in awe.
Peep game though, right? So I had a homie in Chicago. At the time, I used to kick it with this cat, and he would always rap like that. He would rap in the six eighths joint. And I'm like, dog, that is insane. He was the only dude I ever knew that it would ever do this stuff. And so I'm like, okay, I wonder if we could actually chop samples like this. You know what I mean? Because it was like on some rhythm, the rhythm of it. And again, you know, with the beatbox thing, you know, that's my rhythm. That's my drumming for me. You know, I hear something in my head, or I hear a joint and I beatbox to it and try to figure out some type of rhythm. But I'm like, yo, that joint was dope. So I had been doing the 6/8 thing for like at least 10 years before the Robert Glasper thing even came up.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I know Cass is going, you know, try to keep it straightforward. So I'm like, okay, let me reimagine this. Let me take these lyrics. And so, you know, with the lyrics, just on the lyrics alone, with the Kane joint, that took 4 days just to edit.
I can imagine.
You know, because you got to get the cadence right, you know, all that stuff. Then from there, you go to the beat. Then from there, you start adding all the other different elements, you know, and it was like, okay, you know, just try to reimagine the song a different way than what the average listener would kind of imagine it. You know what I mean? Because, stuff like that, to try to take a song out of a 4/4 and that much music, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, well, it definitely stood out, my friend. I mean, when I heard that, I was like, okay, good thing I didn't go into this.
I think you did something kind of similar with De La Soul, Stakes Is High, right? Like, you like totally flipped the time signature on its head.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, because to do that type of work, it's a very time-consuming thing. With the day, well, we'll say the Grandmaster Flash was really like the one where it took me the most time. That took me like a month to do that, you know. So like I would edit it, you know, because you gotta think they rapped those vocals what 30 years ago. So you know, as far as rhythmically, they, and then you know, even in the pocket, they didn't really do too much. So I have to figure out a way to still keep the bounce and all that type of stuff. That joint took a month. The De La joint, maybe a few days after that, once I got the gist of how to really do it. And then, yeah, you know, it was just kind of one of those things. You just, you know, you figure it out and, you know, just try to get, you know, give cats a different perspective on a dope ass song. But then too, I was scared of the Grandmaster Flash, because I'm like, yo, this is a classic song. This is a classic song. So I was willing to take the backlash on that. It was a risk for me in my mind anyway, you know. And even the De La joint, like the day, you know, the Stakes Is High is like, in my opinion, probably top five, I'd say top 10. Top 10 hip hop songs ever of all time.
I won't argue that. I will not argue
You know, so trying to keep to try to keep that, you know, that aesthetic with that joint though, you know, and reimagine it in a different way though, you know.
That is amazing. I mean, so we're spending days on vocals. What tools are we using to make those chops that precise?
We're still using Sony Aster Sonic Foundry from 20 years ago, still.
What? Which version?
I use Sonic Foundry. I use Sony Aster 7.0, but when I originally started, it was Sonic Foundry. But I still use it. Yep.
Man, I was with you at, I want to say Kenny was there, maybe Moppy was there. I'm trying to remember who else was there. And I saw you working on Acid, and I used Acid at the time, and I was like, this guy's a genius with this shit. Like, you were using it like instrumentally. Like, it wasn't just like edit. You were dropping things in and like moving things around in a musical way and like trying to figure out the pocket. You were doing it like I'd never seen anyone kind of work with it that way. And I'm impressed that that's what you're still using.
But the crazy part about it, like, really, when you think about it, like, Ableton really, in all honesty, is the DAW. That is really, that really, to be fair, for the stuff that I've been able to pull out of Acid, the transition into Ableton is actually everything that I want to do, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot easier in Ableton. You know, it's just a learning curve thing, but cats don't even understand like how cold Ableton really is. That joint is, if you really sit down with it, it's something different.
You can make it be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
It's a blank canvas. It's mm-hmm. a blank canvas. You get whatever controller you want, you know, and you can literally you can make something out of it, man. You know?
You were talking about digging for music earlier, and it's like insane, it's a rabbit hole, and Ableton is like that. It's very much a rabbit hole. It goes so deep. Like, I don't know if anyone's ever really explored it to its fullest. Speaking of your DAW of choice, it sounds like you're maybe making the move to Ableton. What other kinds of gear do you use?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. So I have a mini log. I have a Korg mini log. I just got it like literally like maybe about a year ago.
Yes.
And I got I got an 88 key Yamaha. I can't remember what the actual product number is though, but it's an 88 key weighted keys, and that's it. So I use those two pieces. I still more or less only use really the piano and stuff like that. That's what I really use. And then I got like VSTs and things like that, but I still am still old school. I still use samples, figure out a way to manipulate the sounds and I don't even use a drum machine. I draw my drums out with a mouse.
Whoa.
So are you using like drum racks in Ableton, or are you still talking about doing this in Sonic Foundry?
This is all the Acid. It's all the Acid. So I'm literally only drawing and I'm drawing on a grid in Acid. Yep.
Wow. So yep. I mean, you spoke about VSTs. I was watching a video a couple days ago of you teaching a class on Serato, or showing people how you use Serato, because I was there. I mean, we spoke at Beat Society last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is Serato sample in your arsenal at all?
I need to have it. I still don't use it, though.
I can tell you, my brother, everything you've been doing, Serato sample is...
It's fun, man. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It does a different thing than a lot of samplers do.
I know it is. The time stretching alone itself, dude, is you know, you can pretty much put the joint in the joint, you know, in the Serato joint. And you ready to go. You ready to go. You know, that in itself is because the thing in Acid, it's a lot of, because I manually time stretch. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I'm looking at the wave and I'm able to, I can construct how I want it to sound. You know what I mean? But then it's a lot of, say you want to slow the tempo down, because it's in a one shot and we're looking at this visually, it will separate the sound. So then I got to keep further time stretching. Obviously, in Serato sample, once you get it in locked in Serato sample, you can pitch it up, slow it down, turn it upside down. It's there.
There's no artifacts.
At all. And there's no degradation in the sound either.
Right.
You have to stretch it to the maximum, like all the way down or all the way up, for it to sound really weird. Yeah.
These are the things. So these are the tools that I have to start bringing in, because because I know Acid so much, I can't give it up, but I still got to incorporate other different DAWs and systems, you know, and stuff like that to, again, evolve and just learn something new. So like the thing now, the reason why I bought the mini log joint, I've never worked with analog before, ever. I've never worked with hardware. So me being able to make my own sounds and things like that, I've never done that. You know, I've always been a software guy, you know, so I started from the software end. So now I'm kind of in this hardware world, you know, trying to figure out MIDI and all that type of stuff, though, you know?
Word. And what's good about the Mini Log is that there is a large community online where you can get packs of, you know, different patches. And you can just download it. There's a utility that you put on your laptop or whatever, your workstation, and you can load them because you have extra sounds. You get the first 100 patches, and then after that, I think you have an extra 100, so you can load sounds in there as well. So, I mean, that's what I have a Mini Log as well, so I definitely know what you're talking about. Having that piece of analog hardware is thrilling. Thrilling.
Yeah, definitely, though. You know what I mean? But I mean, it's a lot of different ways I freak. You know, you can kind of freak it, man. You get you a sound recorder, go out here in the field. Go record you some sounds because you never know when you're going to use them. You know, go to a jazz club. You know, put it in the middle of the room. You might get a sample out of that. There's no clearance on that. I'm just saying, you know, you want to make you some snares and some hi-hats, go outside, hit a tree, hit a table.
True.
I'm serious. You know, it's however your expression is, though, yo. You know, eventually over time, Cap, you know, you kind of figure out your own way. How you want to express yourself, you will figure out a way to do it, you know?
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so I broke my leg a few years ago. I was in a wheelchair, and I started banging on the wheelchair, like, just because I wanted to make some music, and I sampled it. Like, I used my, like, little voice recorder or whatever, sampled it, and turned it into this banging house track, man. Like, you never know what you can come up with. Like, you, like, getting outside of the computer. Yeah, for sure.
I feel you're getting outside of the box, and that's the whole thing, man. That's how you evolve as an artist and musician.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, obviously, you know, you're gonna stick to the way that you know how to do it, but the only way to evolve is to kind of get out of that comfort zone. You know what I mean? And so, you know, if you don't know how to play, figure out a way to play. Rather be you go take lessons, because when you open up that world of knowing how these songs are put together and learning chords and theory and all these different things, it's going to open up your world so crazy, you know, where literally you can pretty much do anything that you want to do if you, you know, you apply the science how to do it. Or you can at least articulate to somebody else how to get you there, what you're trying to do, though. You know what I mean?
True.
How have you been learning?
I mean, when I first started, it was YouTube. I would do a lot of YouTube. And then I would go to the library and I would buy theory books. And then it was literally, you know, learning, like, you know, the measures and, you know, the keys and all that stuff, how many steps, half step, whole notes and all that stuff. And then over time, so like now I kind of play by ear now. So like I can figure it out. You know, like I'll take a section of, if I want to really learn the song, what I'll do is I'll loop one part of that song. I learn it until I piece the chord together, move to the next, loop it, find it, you know, and then, you know, I'll do that for the whole process of the joint until I'm able to play back verbatim with that song or sample or whatever is, you know, that's kind of how I do it now.
Word.
But it's still like, yo, you know, the lesson thing is cool, but you know, the soul in it, though, you still got to kind of keep that through, cause you can get lost in that whole theory thing, though, you know?
True. True. Now, we were talking about sounds earlier and you released, I'm imagining your first sound pack, Drums and Tings, Volume 1.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that real brief. You know, we're talking about.
I mean, you know, again, it's just one of them things, you know, over a course of time, I have so many sounds that I've gotten given to me. It's ridiculous. You know, over the 20 years. And this is even talking from the beginning where I would just like find little breaks and crashes and cymbals. And then you kind of just, you know how you're going to manipulate them. Like they're not, like there's no, it's not going to be anybody who's going to be able to sound like me, but I can at least give you a starter kit. You know, it's almost like, you know, I don't even know a good analogy with that though. But yeah, you know, you just kind of just collect these sounds and just trying to give cats some a kind of a canvas how to kind of, you know, create their own joint though. Because some of them sounds, people gave it, some of the sounds that I had in the pack, I had other cats give me the same sounds. I was able to manipulate them to make them sound a different way. You know what I mean? So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you're going to necessarily give away your formula. It's just, you know, it's just another way to try to express and try to get another person that's kind of starting out. You know, you can take these drums or you can, it's a way you can pretty much make a beat out of everything in that pack. And then with any other pack that's out here, like, you're not going to sound like Knots. Knots is Knots. You know what I mean? Illmind is Illmind. You know what I mean? Like, Illmind has a way of sounding like Illmind. You can't be another person because you're not them.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, you know, so you have access to all this stuff, but, you know, you got to figure out a way how you're going to make it your own, though. And it's just like sampling. Like, you could take the same sample and flip it completely different than the next man, though. You know what I mean?
True.
As you should.
Yep. As you should. As, yeah, you, as should. You should.
Word. I mean, this is all so inspiring, man. Like, you know, let's talk about, like, the future for Tall Black Guy. Who are we listening to right now? Who are we working with right now?
Let's start with who you're listening to.
Yeah, let's start with who are we listening to right now?
I mean, it's so, the range is so crazy right now, yo. I've been in this Louis Vega and Kenny Dope thing. So the Masters at Work joint. I've been real, real in tune with that. The Honeycomb Cat, Josh Milan. This is all house. This is all Soulful House stuff, right? I mean, the range is so crazy though. You know what I mean? Because the thing about it now is, like, I'm looking for, I try to find specific chords or textures to try to figure out how I can take and then be my own. So, like, I might listen to a lot of stuff, but then I try to figure out a way, damn, these chords, if you slow these chords down, you know, because I'll figure them out, you know, and then how can I make this texture something crazy though? You know what I mean? It's this cat I just came up on today, this cat called Doc. I think his name is Cervini.
Dom Cervini?
Yeah. It's either Doc Cervini or Dom, either one of the two. Horn player though. He's a horn guy, you know. I came up across this cat like maybe about a year ago, and I had it in my phone. I'm like, let me go listen to this cat.
Doc Severinsen. You
know? That's it. That's it right there.
Okay.
Yeah. He got some joints. He got some joints. But a lot of it is either, you know, either on the Soulful House range. It's a joint I found from Art Blakey the other day. You should probably check this out. It's called Miss BC. Serious piece right there though. Serious piece right there. Serious piece right there though. Straight ahead jazz too. Straight ahead jazz, but it's the textures of the, it's nice. Yeah. And see, I'm starting to see this stuff, you know. I'm tending to gravitate more to, like, the warmer, you know, like all your warm colors. And it, again, it reflects the sound as well. You know, like your browns, your reds, oranges, yellows, and, you know, it's a warmth in that. And that's kind of what I try to find, even when I dig, you know. Stuff like that, you know.
And that's going back to the top of the interview, that soulful intelligence, you know, it's the technique with the soul, you know, and that's very hard to balance.
Yeah, man. You know, I haven't really gotten to the trap thing. I just can't do it.
I feel like you've, like, kind of touched on the rhythms a little bit and just, like, brought your own sound to it.
You're going to touch on the rhythm because we had Timbaland and Neptunes. That's the blueprint right there, though. You know what I mean? But it was a lot of textures and it was a lot of, but it was still some type of musical integrity with it. Now, some of the stuff I just don't even understand it, where it's even going. And even in the lyrical and the songs and stuff, I'm like, yo, I don't get this. You know? I don't get this. I mess with a lot of disco stuff too, though. Cats be sleep on the disco joints too, though. You know?
Who are you listening to?
Who's this cat I found today? The Dells. The Dells got some, you know, the Dells, you know, the old soul.
Yeah, of course.
they got some joints. They got some joints.
Definitely. Check out
what.
If you want disco, like new disco, check out bands like Midnight Magic.
Ooh, they're great.
Adeline. She's dope. She was down with Escort. You know, okay. A lot of these new disco bands are really like taking that spirit.
That disco torch,
and it just new techniques that they're adding onto it. You know.
Yeah, man. You know, I still like digging though. Like, it's just something about, like, you know, going and, cause it's not always about taking the sample. It's almost like you taking these. You just got to listen to the, you know, listen how these songs are put together though.
Word.
You know how the chorus and the bridge and the vamp. How is all this stuff? You know, cause that was when, you know, cats didn't really have no beat machine, so like they was figuring this out with live music though. You know.
I remember seeing this interview with like Giorgio Moroder or something, maybe, or maybe I read. Anyway, he would have a drummer come in and just do four on the floor kick drums for like 8 minutes. The drummer just be bored as hell, doing four on the floor kick drums to a metronome. Can I go home now? This sucks.
That was the, you know, because, you know, obviously Giorgio Moroder is, he's a keyboard player, you know what I mean? But he still was ahead of his time, though. It was crazy. The part, we're talking about Giorgio Moroder, and I just watched Scarface, like, maybe about a couple days ago.
So what's the future for Tall Black Guy? Like, what projects do we have coming up? I know I was looking at your SoundCloud. You got some new music up there, dope as usual. Any new albums on the horizon? So I know you do a lot of one-offs with different record labels.
Yeah. The next joint, man, and this is going to be a lot of studying, but I want to do a jazz album. I really want to do, like, I want to compose a jazz album. What that means, obviously, I need to study, but like, I write all the music, you know, like I'm not the craziest of a keyboard player, but I can get my point across, but I write all the music, but then I employ, you know, actual musicians that can actually embellish the idea. You know what I mean? That is a goal of mine, you know, and I don't know how long it's going to take, you know, it can take 5 years. I don't know. It's something that I want to do. In the interim, like, you know, I'll do the one-off thing. I got something with Fat Beats coming on later on in the year. That, you know, that Baker's Dozen series.
Right. Yes.
I got a joint with them. I got some joints with, you know, a couple of homies, me and my man D Jackson. We got this group called 80s Babies. We got a few things coming out. My man Oze Moore, we got some stuff coming out. I talk about my man 14KT. We didn't record it as a gang of stuff, you know. Just kind of figure out a way how to put it together and put it out. But yeah, man, just trying to stay creative, you know, but still have a balance. I still like try to enjoy, you know, like my personal time and stuff like that, you know. And the thing about being full time though, like, it's cool to do it, but just being in your own headspace, sometimes it could kind of make you go backwards a little bit, though, you know.
You dropped a lot of gems over the past 60 minutes or so, but if you could give one piece of advice to somebody who wants to be in your position someday, what would that be?
Trust the process.
Word.
I mean, if I can't say no more than that, I'm not saying nothing that I'm not doing right now.
Yeah.
I gotta trust the process. I gotta trust the process. Even if it's not on no music, it's just in general in life. Trust the process.
Cool.
Word. So where can we find you online for the uninitiated? Social media wise?
You can find me on Twitter, Sir Tall Black Guy. On the Facebook, Tall Black Guy Productions. On Instagram, Tall Black Guy Productions. SoundCloud, Tall Black Guy Productions. Pretty much, if you just Google Tall Black Guy Productions, you can pretty much find anything and everything. Pretty much, you know, that's kind of the interest way. And it'll lead you to a lot of different rabbit holes. You know what I mean? Because that's that whole, you know, kind of trying to make different stuff, though. You know.
Word, word. Well, on that note, yo, my brother, we want to thank you for your time. You dropped a lot of knowledge, you know, a lot of insight. I mean, the stuff that inspired me personally, to be honest.
Yeah.
And again, we want to thank you for your time. You know, kicking it with us. Any shout outs or anything that you'd like to
Ain't really no shout outs, man. You know, just keep this, the main thing, man, just make sure we keep this good music going, though, you know?
Word.
Good music. I don't want the cookie cutter shit. Like, we need some substance. God damn
word,
it.
Word. We need you back up here in NYC, man. We gotta, you know, I know we talked about putting something together with you, you know, and the timing wasn't right, but it's still there. Hey. The feeling is still there. Hey.
I live in DC, my man. So it ain't nothing but a train ride, my brother. We'll talk about that when the time comes.
Word.
I'm literally, actually, the crazy part about it is I'm coming up to New York Sunday.
Oh, word.
I'm coming up to New York Sunday, but I'm on some studio stuff though.
Got you.
But yeah, man, I live on the East Coast, you know. So you know, I'm not overseas, so you know, it's a little bit easier, you know, to get out.
Word. Well, again, you know what I mean? my brother, thank you for your time.
Yes, sir.
I'm Pays Infinite.
I'm Bamada.
I'm Justin Raymond.
And we were just chopping it up with Tall Black Guy. Thank you, my brother.
Ooh, thanks, bro.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks y'all, man. Y'all have a good night.
Back to the beginning of I want love you.